is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source, a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. And it also includes other related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you're welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. This number works anywhere in the world, so you are welcome to ring 877-876-5227. Again, that is 877-876-5227. And I also encourage you to support this program by making a donation or sponsoring a show. For further information, you can visit towardthelight.org. This week, we've got a very special guest who is a dear friend and an in the ear. And he has got an amazing story to share with us this evening. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Ken Prather. Welcome, Ken, and how are you this evening?
Well, I'm doing very well, Juliet, and how are you?
I'm doing well, and it's so wonderful to have you with us finally. And
yeah, finally's the word, huh?
Yeah. Well, we did have some technical problems last time, but this time we are on and everything's going to be just fine here. So what I want to do, gosh, we've got so much to share, I know. So I would like to start by asking you to share with our listening audiences the events that led up to your NDE and a bit about your NDE, and then we're going to get into the work that has culminated as a result of your near-death experiences. This is a very special story you've got to share. And go ahead and tell us a bit about it, Ken.
Well, do you want to hear about both of them? I've had two near-death experiences, and the first one that I had was when I was 9 years old, and I had a reaction to some prescription drugs they were giving to me, and I ended up had hives really bad, and had to go to the hospital, and when I was in the hospital, they had given me like 24 to 48 hours, and
to live, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow.
And I found myself floating in the corner of the room and looking down upon a bed and some people standing at the end of the bed, and it was like I was looking through a mist or a vapor, and I was talking to them, but they couldn't hear me, and I was wondering why they wouldn't answer, and finally when I see them more plainly, I saw it was my mom and dad, and the gentleman standing next to him was the minister, and he was giving somebody on the bed their last rites, and that somebody was me. And it was
did
that time
that
I was...
No.
Pardon?
Did you recognize yourself or no?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I recognized myself immediately, but I wasn't scared. I wasn't scared at all. And it wasn't too long after that, though, I felt a surge or an energy that led me back to within my body. And I woke up probably, they said, a couple hours. You know, I don't know what, you know, there was no time to it then. So, but I didn't talk about that for about 19 years. And I was young, and I was scared, and finally one day I told my mom and dad when I was about 22 years old that I had something to talk to them about. And they said, well, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you remember the time when I was a young child, and I said, I could see you when I was in the hospital. And my dad, he said, what are you talking about, Ken? You were in a coma. And I said, well, Dad, I could see you, but not from the bed. And he was a non-believer. And I told him while I was up in the corner of the room and I could see him, and He said, "No, you couldn't have." And then I said, "Well, you had a minister standing next to you." And he had on a blue coat and a brown tie. That's when my dad became a believer.
Wow.
And my second near-death experience was when I was 49 years old, which was in 1998. I was walking on my way home from work late one night, about 10:30, and I was jumped by five men in a car, and I was beaten with baseball bats. I fell to a gentleman's yard. The next thing I remember, as far as on the earthly plane goes, is I remember waking up in the emergency room of a hospital. And there was a doctor standing over me. And this was 32 days later. And he had my x-rays, and he looked at me, and he said, "Mr. Prather," he says, "we have to operate on you right away. Can you hear me?" I said, "Well, yeah, I can." And he said, "We have to operate now." And my kids were all there, my three adult children, and they said, I looked up at him, and I said, "Well, what do you do if, what happens if you don't operate?"
Now, this
and
is 33
he says, "You're going to die."
After the incident, is that correct?
Pardon?
This is 33 days after the incident, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he said, "I would die." And I said, "Well, what if you do operate?" And he says, "Well," he says, we'll give you a 50-50 chance. We may lose you on the operating table." And I just said, "Just do it." And it was at that point when he was telling me about the operation that I had already come back from the other side. And I knew my destiny at that point. And I knew there was no such thing as dying or death. And my kids knew it too. And
your children were already aware then. You were able to teach them about this kind of in advance. Is that correct?
Exactly. You mean my children?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, when I was on life support, I was on it for 32 days. I was off and on of it. I was on and off of it at times. They couldn't figure it out. The medical community was stumped because I would come off of it, go back on it, come off of it. And my daughter actually wrote a story about what I told her one day. They've got pictures of me on life support and setting up in bed, and they said it's not like I was there. And my daughter knew where I was. She told everybody that I was on the other side visiting with my Creator, because I had been sitting in bed one night after I'd come off life support, and I just had a blank look on my face, they say, and I've got pictures of it. And she said, "Dad," she says, "I know you don't feel like talking right now and you don't have much faith, but why don't we pray to our Creator tonight?" And I told her, I said, "Well, why don't you do it tonight?" And mind you, I don't remember any of this. And I said, "Because I've got an appointment to see him tomorrow." And it was the next morning that I went into another deep coma. And she wrote a story about it and saying that she knew that I was on the other side. So yeah, it was a journey for them too.
That's really special, because we've got this in common. I too was for one of my, in fact my big NDE, I was in a coma for over 5 weeks and then lost my vital signs on my birthday. And it's amazing, you know, how we are able to share with people that even though our bodies are comatose, we are not.
No.
We have such profound experiences and great knowing that comes as a result. And I'm really pleased to hear you talking about this, because even people like your father, who were not believers, but then once you were able to describe that minister in detail, how could he not believe you? And I would have defied him to not believe you after that, you know? So that's really significant evidence right there.
Yeah, I think when I told my dad that about the blue sport coat and the brown tie, that, you know, nobody can make something like that up.
No, indeed. No, indeed. So what are some of the things that you were able to glean from the experience, some of the messages that you got whilst you were on the other side, if you'd like to describe that?
I don't remember much about the beating itself. When I was jumped by I tell everybody, if you look under the coats, they probably got wings, because it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I know it's hard for people to believe, but it turned my whole life around.
Yeah. I understand that totally.
Yeah, and so, you know, everybody thinks I'm supposed to hate them, but no, I don't at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not one bit. But the very first thing that where I found myself on the other side is, so many people describes it as going through a tunnel and being in a dark space and before they come to the light. But I immediately found myself basking in a very bright light, and I call them beings of light.
I do too.
We have that in common, don't we?
And also, I did not go through the tunnel. So this is great, because we have heard a lot of comments about going through the tunnel, and unfortunately, that's become a stereotypical sort of example of the NDE.
Right.
And in fact, you know, when I was speaking to some people, I was talking about the fact that the majority of NDEs do not have the tunnel experience. And I think that a number of people who, and it's interesting to compare notes this way, to see about people like you and I who've been through long, deep comatose states, as well as losing our vital signs and being hooked up to life support systems, and not going to the tunnel and immediately experiencing that being of light and being enveloped in that light and unconditional love.
Yeah, and it was complete love. I'm not going to say second, because seconds and minutes and hours don't exist there. But,
that's right.
You know, and that's hard for everybody on this side to understand, but it is just such a timeless realm to be in. It's totally the now. It's always now.
Mm-hmm.
But, beings took me to a beautiful garden, and this garden, you know, a lot of people have had near-death experiences. They try to describe the colors and flowers and what they see, and the colors are almost indescribable, and that's exactly what they are, indescribable, because I was in this garden walking on a path, and I looked to my right, and there was one being of light standing beside me, and I could understand him, but but it wasn't through voice, it was through telepathy, and I just felt so much compassion coming from him, and I saw all these beautiful, beautiful flowers. Just, that's what I wanted to see. And that's what I saw. And out of every flower, there was a ray of light going towards the universe, going up, up, up. There were millions of them, millions. And I was told by this being of light that I was being witness to the Garden of Creation, where the birth of new souls take place.
Wow.
And then they're sent to the universe and out to grow spiritually, not only on Earth, but many, many other places other than Earth.
Oh,
and I was in awe of all of this, and I remember it like it was yesterday, Juliet. And I felt out of these flowers, I felt love. I felt them speaking to me, and that was so neat. And I wanted to stay there. I didn't want to go anywhere else.
I can certainly understand.
Yeah, just, you know, let me run through the meadow, because they were everywhere. They're everywhere you looked. And so that's not the way it was going to be, though, because he kind of led me, or he thought, and we were there. And I found myself in a massive, massive building. It looked like a building to me because that's the way I recognized it. And it was there that I was introduced, and I met four extremely tall beings called the Teachers of Light. And it was there that I spent the majority of the earthly time and no time over there with these gentle people, very wise. They were much brighter than the beings of light because they were on the highest of the high levels. They were right beneath the level of creation. And I was very humbled by all of this, and I was allowed to remember all of it. And they told me I would have to come back because I had a gift to bring back with me. And I asked them what that gift would be, and they said, well, you will learn it here. You have it in you, is what they told me, and we need to mature it. And that was the reason all this came about, the accident and everything. It was my destiny. And now I understand all too well what that destiny was, because I'm now a hospice and near-death counselor for one of the largest hospice organizations in Indiana. And I help the terminally ill make their transition to the other side. And I pass them off at the time of transition to their spirit guide or to their loved ones. And it's before they cross to the other side, I have already made contact with their spirit guides or their loved ones through messages from the other side. The hospice organization that I have my program with here, they have accepted me and my near-death experiences and my spirituality with open arms.
That is wonderful, because I'm sure that the work you are doing is helping people in such a deep, deep way, not only those who are getting ready to transition, but also the staff, the healthcare providers, the facilitators. And this is something that I've really been wanting to do here in Nashville, Tennessee, where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not drive, so I am not able to get around. Now, do you drive? Do you drive a motor car?
Yes, I do.
You are able to drive.
Yeah, I just have to be careful how I pull out in traffic and stuff like that. Yes, I drive.
That's interesting.
But you're
not able to turn your head, if I remember correctly.
Right. That's due to a condition called ankylosing spondylitis, and that didn't help any when I got beat with the guys with the bats. But
guess not.
No, but when I pull out, you know, I just look different ways and stuff. But I'm fine with it.
Bless you. You've got mobility, so you can get to the hospice. Do you go there pretty much on a daily basis, or?
I work mostly. My hospice work is done out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with people. The families and the terminally ill, who are the majority of them that I'm with, are at home.
Okay.
With their family. And it's, I ask for that because it's not just a journey that the one that's getting ready to make their transition is on, but the whole family's on that journey too.
Oh, yes.
And it's even more comforting to the family to meet me and talk with me and understand about the other side. Sort of eases them down the path, too.
Yes, indeed. And that is such important work, and that's why I've written the article, The Dying Process, from an experiencer's perspective, because since I don't have physical mobility, I'm trying to reach people, if nothing else, at least in writing and this radio show.
Right.
Telephone conversations. And hopefully I will be in a situation where at least people can drive me to, for example, a live hospice here in Nashville where they do have, I believe it is a 30-bed facility, so it's more like a hospital setup, but I think that, well, they also do indeed accommodate people in their homes. So I think it's really wonderful that you are able to get to the people in their homes and help them and their loved ones instead of just reporting to an institution, as it were, every day.
Yeah.
This was so important, and I'm just so pleased.
I also go to the hospice home that we have here. We have a 15 bed inpatient hospice home, freestanding, and I'm out there a lot too. But majority of it's out in the field. That's where I like to be. So, and then I stay with the family after. A year afterwards, usually sometimes longer, and to help them through their grief and bereavement process. And that's a whole other journey they start after their loved one makes their transition.
And that's a very interesting point you brought up, because I've got a dear friend here who has also volunteered at a live hospice, and they had a rule which I find a bit disconcerting, that once the person transitions, that the volunteer is not allowed to have contact with the family, which I think is a mistake, because you've just pointed out that your work does not end when the person transitions. You still need to be available to help the people, the loved ones, the friends of the person who's transitioned. So the hospice you work with does allow that kind of contact, or do you just override any objections to that? Because I think it's so important that a volunteer is allowed to remain in contact with the family of the one who's just crossed over.
I have heard that from other hospice organizations. I just sort of made it very clear to everybody that I was with that please don't even tell me that, even if that's a rule around here, because I won't live by it.
Oh, good for you.
You know, I have my own program called Reaching for Joy, and you know, I counsel with a lot of people through that program, and if I'd have to break away from them, I would. But you cannot you can't be with one getting ready to cross over and their family, and then once they've crossed, just cut the bonds, because that's a bond that you make for a lifetime.
Exactly.
And for a lifetime on the other side, too. And you just don't do that. Because after the one crosses over, I've received many messages once they've crossed over, to get back to the family, to let them know that they've got into the light okay, or went to the light all right, and they're doing fine. And I've been known to drive 250 miles to deliver messages from spirit beings to people I don't even know. Like if I'm in a restaurant or something, I'll get this energy in the message, and I just have to give it to somebody. I don't know them, but it's a message like from a mom or a dad or a brother. I don't proclaim to be psychic or a medium, but certain people say I am, but I just like to say I'm the giver of a gift.
Well, you know what, Ken, by nature we all are psychic and mediums. I mean, I do this.
Well, I know you are, yeah.
But still, that doesn't mean that other people aren't psychic mediums, you know, and I'm really working hard also to remove the stigma about being psychic. Being psychic is just simply being aware as you are, as I am, and especially because when we go to near-death and similar spiritually transformative experiences, just like you said, there is that upsurge of energy, of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as natural as breathing to have this awareness, have this insight. And I'm really trying to take the stigma and the spookiness out of it, because there's nothing spooky about it. It's just radar, it's just awareness. And something special that happened pretty recently with my friend who volunteers at the hospital, she took me to meet a patient there by the name of Liz. And I went in there with Sunny to visit Liz. And she was talking to Liz, and I was talking to Liz telepathically, and of course I could see all kinds of stuff going on. And I just thought, oh, how wonderful is this? Then Liz finally transitioned.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunny was, you know, still connecting with Liz's son, who lives in a different state. And the hospice got upset with her, and I thought, oh, you should not be upset with Sunny at all. She is doing her job, and she is doing a wonderful job at that. Well, just a few weeks ago, I suddenly picked up on Liz very strongly, and Liz wanted me to thank Sunny and let Sunny know that she was such an invaluable person in all of the special work that she was doing. Funnily enough, when I did talk to Sunny and told her what happened, she said, oh goodness me, when was this? And I told her the time, the date, and she had been at the hospice and was talking to somebody else about Liz at that very moment.
Mm.
And so Liz really wanted Sunny to know that she was aware of all of this, and she was so grateful. And even though her body is gone, she's very much alive, and she's quite a firecracker, in a good sense of the word. She's a very lively spirit. And, you know, I'm really going to push hospices listening to this radio show, because they really need to know the importance of the work that we're doing and the need for us to be able to stay in communion with the loved ones and friends of the person, even after one has crossed over, for these very reasons.
All right.
Because the messages are so comforting to those who are left behind. In
fact,
a dear friend of mine just was killed in a motor accident a little over a week ago. And
I think you have a lady who was a hospice physician coming on next Monday, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yes, Pam Kirchner.
Pam Kirchner, yes.
Yeah, I just spent time with her in St. Louis about 4 weeks ago.
That was during the near-death retreat, correct?
Yeah, we had a spiritual retreat there for near-death experiencers. We had 27 people attend, and Pam was one of them, and Dr. Atwater was there, and we had a lot of younger people who, it was great that they were there, because that's one thing we discussed a lot about is near-death experiencers. So many of them come back and they feel lost because everything's changed and they're not quite sure what to do now that they're back and they've had this experience, and they need some sort of direction, and they don't feel like they fit in with anybody, and that can be a very lonely feeling.
Oh, indeed.
Very lonely. And we had like 7 or 8 of them come, and it just was just so beneficial for them. And,
now, you're talking about young NDEers, correct? The 7 or 8 people you were referring to?
Well, young NDEers, I would say the ones out I'm talking about, they were all like in their 20s and 30s.
Wow. Okay.
And we had 2 people there from France, and it was just a very wonderful spiritual setting, very, very spiritual. And I think it is. It is good. There's so many. I know in my group here in Indiana, had many of my near-death experiences that come to it. Just didn't feel like they fit in either, with their own friends. And I guess that goes back to where I said it's a lonely feeling. Because I even have some of my own friends who I've grown up with my whole life for over 40 years. And all of a sudden now, since my last near-death experience, I'm on, it seems like, a different plane. And they don't understand it now. And they'll tell me, like, what you just said a little bit ago about being psychic or something like that. They think it's a spooky type of a thing.
Yeah.
And my one friend told me one day, he says, Ken, he says, what's this with you talking to spooks? I said, you know what? If that's what you want to call them, then that's what I talk to. But it does put you in a whole different light. That's a good word to use.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, very much.
And I think that, you know, this is one of the reasons why all of us are being sent back. Number one, to help bridge that gap.
Mm-hmm.
Because what your friend is referring to as spook is just a human being who's transitioned.
Yeah.
You know, and as you know, as I know, and as a lot of us know, energy can't be destroyed. It just is altered. It just changes. So we change and we leave our bodies behind, like shedding an old garment. We've outgrown it. We don't need it anymore. But we don't become monsters or spooks or freaky things when we leave our bodies behind.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we really do have our work cut out for us. There's so much that we need to convey to the world, because unfortunately there's been so much misinformation circulated for such a very long time, that we really need to undo all of this misinformation and let people know from our experience that it's just simply a shift, not really death at all. And in fact, I didn't know that I was dead, quote, quote, and you didn't even know that you were dead. You just knew that suddenly you had more awareness, 360-degree vision, you know. And I did too, even though on this plane I'm legally blind, there was no blindness on the other side. And just as you said, there was a brilliant color everywhere. And the color here pales by comparison. This plane looks almost gray.
Yeah.
You know, in comparison to what we see and experience on the other side. But somehow, and I know that we really need to reach the medical establishment. And, you know, people, even like your friends, are just not really being exposed to this sort of thing, but yet I would think that they can't help but notice the peace that prevails in your aura and how loving and how calm you are and how aware you are. But I share your experiences of feeling alone at times.
Yeah.
Just feeling odd, you know, feeling strange. I'm not from here, I don't belong here, but yet I've got something to do here. So I think of myself and really all of it.
You got work to do,
memory.
Huh? Yeah, it's, I think we've found a path, at least I have here with a lot of my NDEers, that I've combined my IN support group meetings with my grief and bereavement meetings through my grief and bereavement through hospice. And I've combined both of those groups together, and this way near-death experiencers can come and talk to people who are grieving over their lost loved ones. And, boy, talk about healing for everybody involved, not just the people who are going through grief and and the bereavement process, but also for the near-death experiencers who are now actually finding out what they can do with this gift of a near-death experience. And my last meeting was the largest I've ever had.
Wow, how wonderful that is. How many people roughly were there?
Almost 40.
Wow.
And it wasn't even advertised. So it'll get bigger and bigger.
Where do you hold it, Ken?
Pardon?
Where do you hold your meeting?
I have a place through Cancer Services here in Fort Wayne that they donated me a hall called the Healing Center. Beautiful hall. And they found out about, they sat down and wanted to know about my near-death experience. And they said that, hey, it's all yours. We need it. So, yep, that's where it's at.
I'm still working on that here in Nashville and hoping that I can generate more interest. But there's still that stigma, you know, unfortunately, with the fundamentalist Christian way of thinking. And so I really do have my work cut out for me. But I'm very committed to this because death, quote, is something that we all have to face. And again, I prefer to call it an eternal life experience when people have what Raymond Moody has coined the near-death experience, because from our perspective it is an eternal life experience. We don't think of death.
Right.
We think about, wow, how beautiful this is, how loving this is, how free this is. No pain, no fear, no worry. And
yeah.
The prevailing force is always that unconditional love. And no matter who I talk to, that is what always comes out of their mouths is, I was enveloped in this unconditional love. And the more people can hear about that, maybe they will finally get it, that there's nothing to be afraid of. And in fact, when my friend crossed over, I invited her to come to me. And I heard her say, oh, I am fine. I am happy. And there was a giggle in her voice. And it was so clearly her voice. I just knew it was my friend Mercy. And I said, oh, bless you, friend. And so I've been spending time counseling her family because, you know, her sister rang and was sobbing and saying, why? You know, because they were Catholic, or they were automatically concluding that Mercy or somebody did something wrong. And I said, nothing of the sort. Nothing of the sort. So our messages are very important, and we've just got to stick with it and share it. And have you written, I know that you shared a very special article that you sent to me a while back.
That was the, that was an 8-page short story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you got other writings? And I know you did have a website at one time, Reaching for Joy.
Actually, the website went down because the people that built it for me, it was a gift. And because I helped them after their mom had passed on. And they lived in Canada, and they lost the website. But very soon, I shall be having another one come up, probably in a couple months. And as far as my writings go, yes, I am a published writer of short stories and poetry. And fact is, I'm right in the middle of sending all my manuscript material to my two editors, and my first book should be published probably in about 6 months.
That's wonderful. Do you have a publisher through whom this will be?
Yes, I have a publisher waiting in the wings. So all we got to do is get it edited out, and I'm about halfway. I'm sending everything to them on the computer, and when they get everything, I'll say, let's do it. So.
Well, why don't you give whatever contact information you can, and will your website have the same URL when it is reinstated, or is it going to be a completely different web address? Or do you know?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
but your organization is called Reaching for Joy. And how can people contact you for support and help in getting a hold of your manuscript?
Well, they can email me. They can email me at either one of two email addresses. The best one to contact me at is PratherKen, that's P-R-A-T-H-E-R, Ken, at yahoo.com.
Okay, so that's PRATHERKEN at yahoo.com, and that's P-S-Peter, PratherKen at yahoo.
Yeah, it's just my name spelled backwards.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's wonderful, because you're just doing such tremendous work. And have you been able to do outreach to other hospices, or are you mainly focused on the area in Indiana where you are?
Actually, right now, I'm really focused right where I'm at. Because most of my time, like I said, is spent out in the field and in hospitals. And I do have another part of my program where I have a program with the our local zoo, and we take zoo animals up to visit sick children in hospitals, and we go right into intensive care units and visit the children in their beds. And that keeps us extremely busy, too. And that's not work. That's a blessing.
Yes.
And so with all that going on, now I do have five or six other chapters of Reaching for Joy around the country. And as we get the people inclined, we'll hopefully, if they want to start volunteering at other hospices, we can incorporate what Reaching for Joy here does around the nation and other places, too.
Well, I would really love to help promote that as well, because, again, if I weren't so physically immobile anyway, I would be going around all the hospices. Here in Nashville, we've got a lot of medical facilities, for sure.
Uh-huh.
And I am working on giving talks and doing workshops on this just because they really do need it. And a number of people have expressed real interest in it. So I think between being, you know, like yourself, who's able to go out into the field and do this work in person, I, on the other hand, am, you know, doing it through the internet, through writing, through the radio broadcast here on BBS Radio, and bless them. This is such a tremendous service because, again, it is really important that we are able to reach people with this work all over the world. And, people there's a big shift taking place right now with this new paradigm that we're entering about the fact that life is eternal. And
right.
Also using music for healing, using animals. This is so special because I know, having been very deathly ill most of my childhood, and, you know, having NDEs as a child as well as an adult, having animals brought to me and being surrounded by music were the most comforting things that I could really behold. And I really appreciate that people are starting to realize the validity of, because number one, animals love unconditionally.
Oh yeah, unconditional love.
And they're so wonderful.
Every critter out there has a spirit and a soul.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, people must realize that. And through my hospice counseling, I have received messages from many, many animals and critters on the other side waiting for their master to come and join them, and they will help them. I have walked into some of my hospice patients' houses, and I've seen their dogs that have passed on sitting on the staircase, and I pick up their energy, and the patients knew they were in there, but needed somebody to tell them they were. And I've even told many of them the dog's name and what it looked like, and because I could see it.
Well, there you go, and see how natural that is.
Oh yeah, and well, you know, like doing the meaty bone, you know. But and what we also have done is because it's ironic, I just got off the phone to a lady today about it. I've started the first pet loss support group in northern Indiana.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's where people will be able to come and work through grief over their pets. Because so many people, especially the elderly, once your loved one crosses over and you're left with a pet, that pet becomes your whole life.
So. I had a friend come to me, and he was just absolutely devastated when his cat of 15, 16 years finally crossed over, and I was able to describe their keys to my friend and how he was doing, and that he was very happy and still with him, you know. And then my friend would report back to me that he would experience his cat's presence around him, and I said, so you see, Dougie's not really gone, he's just changed form, but he's kind of getting a little mischief on you, so watch out, you know. And it's really nice to be able to comfort people and just help them remember, you know, if people don't try to focus so much with their physical eyes, but listen again to their radar, that they're going to be able to pick up on their pets and other things who have crossed over. And the veil, thank goodness, is becoming thinner and thinner all the time. And we are being quickened so that all life on this plane is vibrating at a higher frequency. Consequently, there's going to be less of an experience of a wall or veil or a separation between this dimension and the other dimensions where we hang out when we leave the physical plane. I was going to ask you, what kind of animals from the zoo do you bring into the hospital?
We take the soft furry kind, the cuddly kind. We don't take reptiles. We're not allowed to, really, because of state law and federal law. But we take, like, guinea pigs, chinchillas, rabbits, you know, the soft furry kind that people like to touch and cuddle with. And so that's the type. But, you know, I'm going to backtrack on something. You know, we talk about near-death experiences, and we talk about the research on the experience itself and the crossing over. And what so many people must understand is it's really not the experience that is all that special. It's how you react to that experience. It's what you do when you come back to the earthly plane and do with that special gift. And I think that's what we have to nurture, being near-death experiencers. Is maturing that gift.
And the powerful message is that
because that gift is wasted if we just come back and say, hey, I've had a near-death experience. Isn't that special? Not. Not unless you make it special when you come back.
Well, I would agree with you. What we do with our experiences, and really I feel, and I could be mistaken, and I'm always willing to be shown if I'm in error about something, but I've just always had the feeling that we can't help but be changed as a result of going through these experiences. But one thing that is important to state is that just because we have been through these experiences, we aren't automatically saints, and we're certainly not better than anyone else. We've just had these experiences, and you're absolutely right. What we do with them, how we respond to them, what we bring back from the other side is a very, very important thing. And I know that there isn't one day that doesn't go by that I don't think about these experiences that I've been through. And I'm always in prayer, how can I really make a difference?
Yeah.
Because...
Yep, and that's so important. Because we're basically just serving an internship now.
Yes, that is so true.
Yeah, we're just getting ready to do what we're going to be doing when we go home.
And I feel the awareness of going home, too. And maybe it's because I've also been aware of so many people crossing over and my own health not being, let's say, what it could be. And so that just puts me on notice all the more that I really need to make a difference. Because, you know, I am in my 60s and I'm not in my 20s. And, well... Having said that, with my NDEs, I guess I actually could say I'm 30 years old and not be lying, because I did lose my vital signs on my birthday, and so that was 30 years ago. But still my body's saying, well, yes, but you've got white hair, and that could still be. But I just feel so connected with you, and I have ever since meeting you, and I think about you all the time. And I think about the wonderful work that you are doing and really, you know, wanting to learn from you, because you've made such a tremendous difference. Of course, you're not quite in the thick of the Bible Belt in America as I am, but I still am committed to doing what I can to help spread this word, and I would really love to, you know, share again with people about how to contact you. Do you want to give your phone number to our audience, or would you just prefer that we share the email again?
Did you say what, phone number?
Yes, would you like to share your phone number with our audience in case someone...
Oh, yeah, I have no problem with that.
Go ahead.
It's area code 260-637-1705.
Okay, 260... Yeah.
Area code 260-637-1705.
Okay, and again, your email is Prather, P-R-A-N.
Yeah, PratherKen at yahoo.com.
Okay.
Now, anybody that wants an 8-page short story sent to them, they're free, and just email me or call me, and I will get one out in the mail to them.
Well, that would be a lovely gift to have, because I really enjoyed reading that myself. And
it covers my two near-death experiences. It also covers gifts and miracles that have been sent my way when I was in a nursing home for 3 years. An angel that came to my bedside. It's all in this short story. So
you were in the hospital for how long, and then you were in a nursing home for...
I was in ICU for 32 days. I was in the hospital, I should say acute care, for 3 months. And then I was in a nursing home for 3 years. And they had said I would never walk again after the operation. They said I'd be wheelchair bound the rest of my life and paralyzed. But 1 year after the operation, I got a calling from my spirit guide, Eagle Song, to go to a mountain in Colorado. I went to this mountain in Colorado. I went to Colorado all by myself, wheelchair bound to O'Hare Airport and everything. And I got out there and had my friend take me to the top of the mountain I was directed to go to. I spent 6 hours on top of this mountain, came down, and the next day I could walk.
Well, I'm witness to that, friend, because I saw you stand up and walk in your tall, wonderful soul.
I had the wheelchair with me, but I was just sitting in it.
Yes.
But, yes, I walk with a cane now, and my kids are a testimonial to that. I couldn't walk at all. I came back, and it's amazing what the light from the other side will do for us.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Well, Ken, we are going to have to sign off here in a moment, but I am just so pleased to have finally got you on our show, and everything worked out wonderful this time. And
well, it's
just been such a pleasure and an honor to have you with us.
Well, it's always nice talking to you, young lady.
Oh, it's nice talking to you, too. You're such a dear friend, and I love you always, and...
Now I love you too, okay?
All right. Well, you take good care of yourself, and we will be in touch again.
Okay.
I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us for this wonderful show and talking to Ken Prather. And please join us again next week when we'll have another transmission of Towards the Light leading back to the source. And please do remember that only love prevails. Blessings and light.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.